Now, yesterday morning in the program here, we spoke at the beginning of the program to Frank Fahey, who was the taxi driver and councillor as well. We spoke about Eileen Shocknessy, councillor Shocknessy, and the story. She was 25 years dead, so she was yesterday, and it's a very sad story. And we told you that there was a plaque being unveiled for Eileen yesterday, and family members and otherwise were together. Our colleague from the newsroom, David Nevin, went down there, and he joins me this morning. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
There was a good crew of people there, but it was a very poignant and sad event, really.
Yeah, it was. And as you said, there, 25 years yesterday marked the 25th anniversary of the murder of Eileen Costello Shocknessy. And the event yesterday really brought together family, friends, former colleagues. I suppose the main message I came across was just that Eileen was just such a wonderful person, you know, just a great people person. And people are just so upset to this day that nobody has ever been caught for her murder.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard on the family. You know, they've been looking for answers for justice for so long. And I spoke to the family yesterday, and some of them are kind of losing hope at this point that anything will ever come of it. Now, they haven't given up. And I spoke to Gardaí yesterday as well, and they were adamant that the investigation is still going on, that they've never given up. They still have people of interest and lines of inquiry, and they are following them up. And they're hopeful that they will get justice for Eileen and for her family as well.
And I know you spoke to her brother Martin, and Martin was a regular on the programme here around that time to try and get justice done as well. But you can sense, because you've done a vox pop for us here, but you can sense in his voice the sadness is still inside in his heart.
Yeah. And I asked him over the 25 years how it's been, and, you know, has it gotten any easier? And he said, maybe a little, but you could get that sense of maybe a little, but not really. You know, again, to go 25 years without answers, you know, and it's just a terrible story, you know, terrible story.
It's sad, yeah.
It's hard to know what to say, really. You know, it goes without saying, nobody deserved the death that Eileen received, you know, nobody, but least of all Eileen. As I said, everyone yesterday was just spoke of just how what a wonderful, gentle people person she was. Always eager to help, always eager to please. Very, very hard working. You know, and when working in the taxi game, she was well suited to it by all accounts. But she worked the day shift, so she'd work the you know, the 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And maybe a part of that was safety, that it was just safer to drive during the day. And on that day in question, when this happened, you know, she picked up a fare around 8 p.m. So she would have been coming off her shift, but she probably thought, I'll take one last fare before I hang it up or hand over the taxi to whoever. And just it turned out to be, unfortunately, an individual who got into that car was just a very, you know, nasty piece of work.
Now, the confidential number is 1800-666-111 if you know anything about this. So lead us into the vox pop then, and the people you spoke
to. And so I suppose the matter at hand, the plaque in Eyre Square. So first of all, the plaque itself is at the end of the taxi rank, I suppose, as you were looking across at the Imperial Hotel.
Yeah.
Just at the very edge of the curb there, nearly, really, I suppose. What the plaque is actually kind of a lovely piece of polished stone inset into the pavement, and it's kind of surrounding a tree. It is just inscribed with Eileen's name and her date of birth, and unfortunately the date in which she was murdered. But a very, very nice tribute, and again, just a lovely to remember Eileen. But again, yesterday was about the plaque, the unveiling, remembering Eileen, but it was also about a renewed appeal that this case had never been solved, and Gardaí are very eager to speak to people. And as you'll hear in this clip now in a few minutes, they are following up a number of lines of inquiry, including a man who was seen driving Eileen's car. We'll hear a detailed description of him. The same man was seen leaving the scene where her body was, or her car was discovered. So there are a number of clues the Gardaí are following up on, and the sense I got yesterday was that they're now appealing to people. It has been 25 years, and maybe it's time for people who know something to finally come forward, that enough time has passed that, you know, for whatever reason, if you've been holding on to information, you know, maybe now is the time to finally come forward, maybe bring some relief to the family, some closure to the family who really desperately needed at this point, 25 years on. But in the clip now, the first person you will hear is Eileen's brother, Martin.
I'm Martin Costello, Eileen's brother, and she was a good, lively type of girl, made for cards, and Medford dancing. Very honest, straight type old lady. Yeah. She didn't deserve to be killed anyway. But I have nothing to say that what wasn't said before. It went on 25 years. I don't know what anything come out of it at this stage. I don't think so. No harm in trying anyhow.
And Martin, you know, as you said, it's been 25 years with no real answers, no justice. How have those 25 years been for you and for the family as well?
It was shocking for her mother anyhow, and Damien and Susan, her son and daughter, and her grandchildren, I mean. Peter, the only brother I have, is in Canada. Yeah, so that's the whole lot of it. There aren't many who was in it. We're scarce and up on the ground. Yeah.
And 25 years on, obviously, it doesn't get any easier.
Doesn't get any easier. Well, maybe a little bit easier as time goes on. I think she was on a 47. She'd be 70 now. She'd be 72, I think, if she lived.
My name is Sinead Mooney. I'm a niece of Eileen Castellaw O'Shaughnessy, who was brutally murdered in 1997. I have the following letter from her brother, PJ, who resides in Toronto, and he asked if we would read this out today on her memorial celebration. I last saw Eileen in October 1997 when I was home visiting my family. Eileen was very energised and very happy. She talked about moving to Galway City for the next chapter of her life. She was absolutely loving her job as a taxi driver and the people whom she worked with. Her daughter Susan said she had the perfect job as it offered a captive audience. I returned to Canada feeling very positive about her plans and was delighted for Eileen and all her achievements. A mere 6 weeks later, her future was eliminated. While we grieve her death, I remember my sister. Eileen was a very independent and courageous lady with a very strong motivation. Being one of the first female taxi drivers in Galway City, she thrived on the fun and banter with all her colleagues and passengers. Her extreme geographic knowledge benefited her greatly, and no trip was too far. But sadly, one night she picked up her final fare. I now, as her brother and the family, would like to appeal to the public to go to the Gardaí should they have any clue or hunch. As a family, it is unknown the heartache we have all suffered over the past 25 years. On behalf of our family, I would like to thank Frank Cherm and all the taxi rank personnel for keeping her memory and the cold case alive. While it would be impossible to thank everyone, our family extend a warm thank you to anyone who helped in any way since 1997. We are forever grateful. My wish is that one day this case will be solved. Eileen would only love to be here chatting with us all today. Thank you sincerely for joining in on this celebration.
My name is Maria Daly. I was Eileen Costello's first cousin. At the time, I lived in London at the time of Eileen's death, and her daughter Susan had just come to London and was staying with me at the time when we got the terrible news. From Eileen's visits over, Eileen was just such an inoffensive, fun-loving, energetic person who just loved to play cards and loved to dance. She was bright, engaging. It's just such a tragedy, and I just can't come to terms with the fact that nobody has ever been brought to justice because somebody out there knows something.
Joe Stevens Corrifin, I just want to say that I'm here today to be witnessing Eileen's plaque in the square. It's so sad that she passed away and that nobody has been found for her murder. Eileen grew up with us. We were at school together. We were always friends. In fact, I used to work in Shum, and she always come in and out to work with me when I was in Shum. So I'd just like to say it's too, so sad of a day.
Councillor Frank Fahey, chairman of Big O Taxis, and I've been a taxi driver for 32 years. I first met Eileen in the early years when I'd started taxiing, and we both drove the same car. I did the nights, she did the days, and she was a hard grafter. She was a great worker. She was a great people person. She loved people, talking to people, and she was very helpful and very positive, and nothing was too much trouble for her. She went out of her way to help particularly older customers and fragile customers, and people going to hospital appointments and that, and she just had a great way about her dealing with people, and she was a great talker as well. She loved to talk, and I remember one time I had an accident and I ended up in the hospital, and she came to visit me, and she had a box of chocolates, a box of milk tray chocolates, and I like chocolates. Most people do. But it was a lovely thought. She was one of very few taxi drivers actually came to visit me in hospital. I appreciated it. And she loved her job, and she really enjoyed it. She tried a lot of different things in life previous to that. A lot of hard work. I think at one stage she used to grow vegetables, cabbages and stuff like that, sell them into shops and that. And that's hard work. I was reared on a farm. I know what it's like. And I think she enjoyed the comfort of sitting in the car with the heat on, the radio on, and meet her ticking and getting paid. And she loved driving as well. And of course, when she's sitting in the car, she could listen to music or CDs or to Mick Flavin. She was a great fan of Mick Flavin. She'd go up and down the country, any part of the country, to see Mick Flavin. And she was a lovely person. Lovely person. My kids were quite small at the time, and any time she'd when we'd swap cars in the evening when she'd be finishing her shift, and I'd be starting her shift, she'd call in. She'd have a cup of tea, and she'd often give my kids a pound each. I think it was a pound that time or whatever, or a euro, but the kids are very fond of her, and they regularly, even to this day, mention her name will come up in conversation. And anytime I get a run out towards Tuam or even Knockdoor, Clare Galway or Turlough, I always think of her when I'm passing. And the odd time I'll get a run down to where she's buried, down Kilmaylan Cemetery, down to the left there from Ballyglunin, and regularly we're going to visit her grave and think of her often. And she was a big loss to her family, and the fact that nobody has ever been got for her killing is shameful. And it's the family deserve peace and comfort, and that give them some degree of peace and comfort, that somebody would pay for the crime that they committed, the heinous crime, the ultimate crime, to take somebody's life, somebody who's going about their daily out trying to earn a shilling. And Eileen wasn't afraid to go out and work.
Detective Superintendent Shane Cummins, I'm of responsibility for the serious crime investigation for the Galway Garda Division. And suppose in respect of this case, which is a horrific murder of a female taxi driver, Eileen Costello, shocked to see, in 1997, which is 25 years ago today, I want to reiterate that the Garda investigation is very much alive in respect of this case. It has never been downgraded or never been put to bed. We have continued to do a number of lines of inquiry, and we will continue to do so. Today's media appeal is going back on a number of items that we didn't get information on at the original investigation, but also in respect of persons or people who may have been in possession of information that for one reason or another didn't feel they could have come forward and give us that information at the time of the murder. And I'm appealing to those people there today, if they have information that could benefit our investigation, to come forward to us at the incident room in the Northwestern Region Garda headquarters, and we'll treat them in a confidential and private matter. I suppose there are four key matters we want to identify for information, or today to appeal for information, and those are that a woman was seen walking on the N17 on the night of the 30th, which is the day of the murder, at approximately 8:30 p.m. She was seen to be in a distressed state and walking from Thinkers Lane in the direction of Galway City. She was never identified, and we're appealing for information in respect of her identity. The second piece is Eileen's taxi was seen driving at between 8:30 and 8:45 p.m. in the Tuam Road area, close to the scene of the crime. A motorist passed that car out, he wanted to get past it, and he looked in the window and saw a man driving the car with a beard. We're satisfied that that was Eileen's taxi, as I say. However, we've never been able to identify that male person with the beard. And again, it's a significant piece of information that we would like to appeal for the public today in advancing the identity of that male person. The third piece is at Leiden House Bakery, which is on the Tuam Road, which is in close proximity, approximately a mile from the crime scene. A car was abandoned and a male was seen getting out of that car. That male is best described between 5'9" and 5'11", of average build, wearing a green jacket and a beige canvas bag. He jumped down over the wall at Leiden House in the direction of the Headford Road, and we were never able to identify that person. So anybody with information in respect to the identity of that man, if they could come forward to us, would be of great assistance. And the last piece of information is in respect of a red car, described as a small red car, that backed up Tinker's Lane at 2 a.m. on the morning of the 1st of December, which would mean hours after the murder. That car stayed there for a duration and then left. We have never been able to identify the owner of the car or the occupants, and we're appealing for any information in respect of the owner or the occupants of that car. So as I say, our investigation is very much live, very much active. It was a horrendous crime 25 years ago. It's a horrendous crime today. We are very anxious for the family of Eileen to bring it to a conclusion, and we're hoping from today's media appeal that we will get some breakthrough.
1997 was a different time 25 years ago in terms, I suppose, access to CCTV and images and that kind of thing. But in terms of one thing you mentioned there, that this man with the beard seen driving a car, a man seen leaving the scene, and again, a fairly good description of his height, he had a beard, a green jacket, that kind of thing. I know you say that this individual is never identified, but have Gardaí established suspects or definitive lines of inquiry, or what can we say about that?
Well, obviously I must be very conscious in respect of what I can say, that I don't want to jeopardise the investigation, but persons of interest have been identified. Some have been ruled out over the years, some still remain persons of interest in the investigation. However, we do need concrete evidence in order to progress any criminal investigation. So, you know, when you take all the different pieces of information that we're looking for, we are hopeful that somewhere in that there'll be enough evidence to get us to a position where we'll be able to advance this crime. But you know, there are, as you quite rightly say, advances in DNA technology and fingerprinting and that kind of areas. So you know, we continuously review our exhibits that we have gathered, and where we can submit them for new analysis, we are continuing to do so in the event that we'll get some breakthrough.
That's David Nevin, our colleague indeed, who went out to that event yesterday. And you know what, I sat in the studio with the headphones on just listening to it, and it would just bring tears to a stone, so it would. If anybody knows anything at all about it, will you make contact with Angara Chicona on 101 538 000. Now is the time that, as David said at the beginning there, now is the time that if you know something, or you were somewhere, or you weren't somewhere, or you know some, or you heard something, now is the time to make contact with the crew in Mill Street Garda Station or Garda Headquarters, 091 538000, or call us here on 091 77 0077. May Eileen rest in peace, and may her family hopefully at some stage get peace with what has happened after 25 years and get justice.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Keep it local. Working with over 30 new West of Ireland suppliers.
Now, we've often spoken on this program about drugs, but Constantine McNeilis joins me, and we're looking at drugs decriminalisation. And just during our chat before we came to air, two people per day die from drugs overdoses. Neil, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. Now, this did get across the line last night. Can I pull you over there as well,
yeah,
a little bit?
Thanks, Keith. Thanks for having us in. Yeah, I suppose, look, this was a Labour Party motion that was debated last night, and it was unchallenged by government. And it was really about committing the government to a citizens' assembly on drugs. Because what's happening at the moment is it's not happening. The fact is that we have this serious issue that is no longer just confined to urban areas in the country, that it's now in every single small parish. And you regularly talk about this. But decriminalisation is really... It's not to punish people by going through the courts, because it doesn't work. It hasn't worked. It's not working. Two people
so
die.
Are you pro-drugs then?
No, I'm not pro-drugs. Okay. This is completely... This is not about legalising... This is not about legalising drugs. That's a completely different debate. This is about decriminalising the user. Okay, so there's a huge waste of resources done by Garda Síochána every year. Over 10,000 people are arrested every year in this country for drug use. 70% of those people that were arrested because it was for their personal use, right? And there were over 13,994 offences in 2021. That's a huge waste of resources going after the small-time guy at the time. What we were proposing, and what it was agreed by the government last night and other people who didn't oppose it, is to have a big proper grown-up conversation about where we are in this country at the moment with drugs. Two people die every single year, every single day in this country because of drug related. Every single day of the year. That's over 786 people died in 2017 in this country. Okay, when the last proper figures were done, which was double the amount number of people who died from suicide and five times the amount of number of people who died on the roads in this country. So this affects every single community across the country. And the other thing is that the WHO is now in favour of decriminalisation because they realise themselves that the issues that are happening about drugs, it just isn't working when you go the whole idea of going through the justice side of things. A health-led diversion system is something that, which I'm a member of, the Regional Drugs Task Force has been talking about for years as well. And part of what this will do then, Keith, is that we would see a lot more money being invested into, like, say, the likes of, to expand the work of the Criminal Assets Bureau, to turn around and target the size of the smaller dealers that are in this town, right? the smaller dealers that are in our communities, with the full resources of the Garda Síochána, to significantly increase the amount of funding that needs for the drugs task forces. And regularly oversight of the addiction treatment services that we have in this country. Every time we try to build something, somebody says, oh, you can't put that drugs treatment centre beside my house because they'll all be users and they'll have the kids on top of them and all that kind of stuff. It's nonsense.
Right? Can I just go back to, and I know you've got, and it did get through last night, but when you talk about decriminalising the whole situation in relation to the use of drugs, I mean, are you not just feeding in then to the dealers? Because then the dealers know that if they sell Joey a bag of weed or whatever they sell him, and he's caught, he won't be charged with it because it's for private use. And so you really are feeding the criminal element, though. You're decriminalising it for the person, but the criminals involved in this are making all the flipping money.
Okay, well, suppose, first of all, is Joey, who's taken the small amount of hash in the first place, okay, and he gets caught with drugs, is going through a court system and ties up the court system to
I know that, yeah, but if you decriminalise it and he doesn't decriminalize go through
the court. What we were doing with Joey is we'd be saying to Joey, first of all, what they did, the state in 2020, is they introduced a new system where we actually have a health-led diversion system where people would then turn around and say, right, Joey, we're going to bring you in now. You're going to have to go off and do a course and learn about yourself, otherwise you won't get a criminal conviction. And at the moment, there's a three-strike approach for that, where we try and get you to understand the mistakes that you're making by doing that. The drug dealer himself, the likes of your Keenahans and these big mad cartels that are actually selling stuff into this country on a regular scale, that's whom we need to go after. But also the lieutenants, that are the ones that are selling to your friend Joey down the road that's getting those drugs. To do that, the guards need to put all the resources towards that one model, going after the big boys, going after the dealers, right? The small guy.
When they go after the big guy, Neil, and you and I are adults at this stage, and I'm older than you, but I mean, once you go after the big guy, somebody else comes in and takes up the cudgels from there, and they continue with the supply of drugs, and there'll be a big hit, and they've got a drug squad, and I know that Chief Superintendent Jerry Roach, who's in situ now, intends to clean it and wipe it out. But somebody else will come in from Limerick, from Mayo, from Louth. They're going to come from somewhere with the drugs because the market is there for them.
Yeah, and that's the type of conversation that's going to be needed at this Citizens' Assembly when we actually have this grown-up conversation about the drugs issue that we have in our country. We can turn around and say and pretend that it doesn't affect my street or my road or anything like that, but it's absolutely everywhere now at the moment. This is a model that has worked in Portugal. Okay, it's worked in other countries right across the model. So we're not just making this up. Overnight, they were able to turn around and sort out, first of all, in a humanitarian way, young addict that dies. So when we think about the people today now on World AIDS Day today, and we think about the amount of people that actually, you know, will be injecting themselves in unsafe areas, we'll be passing on HIV, we'll be passing on any, you know, hepatitis.
Yeah.
And we'll turn around and we'll see the fact that in a safe, controlled area that they'll be able to inject, well, then we know that you may be to help those people. And this is a humanitarian effort as well, because we have to make sure that we're looking after proper people and making sure that they're looked after. So I suppose, Keith, what I'd be saying to you is that, yeah, our whole purpose is to go after those big dealers. And when the next guy comes in, we make sure that he's gone after as well. And if somebody knows the information about these dealers, because they're in our community, that information needs to be given to the Gardaí constantly. But it's not been. So again, look at what we were saying is to firm up a date by government, because this was part of their programme for government originally. And then by doing that, then we can get the guards to target that organised crime, to target the traffickers and target those dealers. But you must remember, Keith, this is not just about, you know, Joey using the drugs, as you said there. It's also the effect that it has on his family, drug intimidation that we've spoken about before. So this is how you go after them. Because the drug intimidation, if somebody's got a problem, you try to fix it, not trying to throw the book at them.
Yeah, Joey has to want to get help.
Yeah, and Joey has to, and the help has to be there for it. So rather than, you know, turning around, like, our mental health services are non-existent in this country, and I personally believe, and we've spoken about that, but if we're talking about this, the majority of people that will take some very, very hard drugs in this country are running away from something. To get that euphoria, that enjoyment, that 2-minute bliss of life that they had, is probably covering up some terrible abuse that they may have had, some other effects that they have for it.
So you're saying get to the core of the issue then?
Yeah, and that's what the health service approach has to do rather than the criminal approach.
But they're already overstretched as we speak, so they're...
But if you think how much money we waste in the courts every year that could be diverted this...
I get this, but I'm playing devil's advocate here, I get it, but I mean the situation is that... I can never see it being eliminated. And what I'd be worried about is the next generation.
And that's exactly what you said there. By the fact you said that it's never going to be eliminated, it means the approach that we're taking right now isn't working. Where if we need to try this other approach, and this is all of the other countries have looked at this, and I really believe it's the right one to go for. But look at, I mean, the main thing is that the fact is the government have now said that they will let this citizens' assembly happen. I mean, I remember coming to you years ago and we were talking about, you know, the whole idea of reducing the price of alcohol and the minimum pricing of alcohol, and people laughed at us. And it's happened.
And
eventually we will see that the data, and this is what it's all about as well, is the raw data, to trace it back and show that it works.
You see, what I'd love is to sit here in 6 months' time and say you're down to no deaths a day on a daily basis. But that's an ideal world, it's not going to work.
No, it's not. But I mean, if we can turn around and treat these addicts, which they are, as human beings, and give them the support that they need, and let them be able to have a lifestyle that, rather than having to be, you know, on the streets begging, robbing shops, that they know that the support's there for them and then a safe environment, then you could knock on for a moment more.
I like it, but I have to challenge you. That's my role. But I do like the concept of it. So, I mean, for what got through in the Dáil last evening, what difference does that make right now?
Well, it means that, first of all, is it sets the tone for when the Citizens' Assembly will start. And that tone will mean, first of all, to firm up a date for the convening of the Citizens' Assembly. The idea then is the facilitation of supervised injection facilities, that will be part of the conversation that we'll have at the time. The regulatory oversight of additional treatment services, that needs to be looked at as well. And to significantly look at the funding that for those regional drugs task forces that we have, the brilliant work that Micheál and other crew that do in the West of Ireland.
Super.
I spoke to Joe O'Neill, our chairperson, yesterday about this. I said, Joe, I'm coming out very in favour of this. And like he said, look, this is a model we have to look at. What's there at the moment is not working.
Yeah. Listen, thank you for joining us. We should have an open debate on this. When do you think the Citizens' Assembly will be up and running?
It'll be in next year. I mean, look, the 2 years left for this government. So, I mean, they've given a commitment that we're going to have it. So we would love to see it and push it that it'll happen in the first half of next year.
All right. Thanks, Eddie, for joining us today on the programme. That's Constantine McNeilis. What are your thoughts and comments? If you want to get in contact with us, feel free to do so on 0917700077. We're back. We're looking at the Cope Sleepout. And Mary Coughlin is coming back to town.
Galway Talks in association with Tesco. Keep it local. Working with over 30 new West of Ireland suppliers.
Now tomorrow, and I'm tight on time, but tomorrow sees the Cope Galway sleep out on the streets of Galway. And I'm joined by Sharon Fitzpatrick from Cope Galway. She joins me on the line today. Sharon, good morning to you. Sharon, can you hear me okay there? Let me just do this and this and see. Sharon, can you hear me okay there? No, I seem to have lost Sharon. Sharon, can you hear me? I can hear Sharon in the background. Can I try that again, John, if you don't mind, please? Just while we're getting Sharon back up there again, if you don't mind. Don't forget, tomorrow is the Galway Lions Club auction here between 9 o'clock and 12 o'clock. Online bidding is now open on galwaylionsclub.ie, but the Galway Lions Club annual radio auction in association with Galway Bay FM will take place live on Galway Talks tomorrow morning, Friday the 2nd of December. Online bidding will open at 9 a.m. Did open at 9 a.m. sorry, on Tuesday morning last. And if you want to get further details, phone bids will be accepted tomorrow as well on 091-353-250. That's 091-353-250 from 9 a.m. Friday the December the 2nd. So if you want to get further details there, you can do so. Again, that number is 091-353-250. Auctioneers will be closing bidding on an individual item as they're sold, as you've kind of known down through the years. So do join us tomorrow morning. We're looking forward to that, but join us tomorrow morning and we look forward to it from there. Sharon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
How are you today? Listen, the sleep out tomorrow, you have business leaders across, how many business leaders across the country have you, or across the county have you got?
We do indeed, Keith. So tomorrow night is the 11th Cup Galway Business Leaders Sleep Out. And this year we have 39 business leaders taking part who will be sleeping out for 12 hours from 6 o'clock tomorrow evening until 6 o'clock on Saturday morning, all to raise awareness of homelessness in Galway and to raise funds for Cup Galway's homeless services.
Now, if they want to donate and see who's doing this, what's the best website to go to on this one?
Yeah, we'd really appreciate the support of the public and the general Galway community. So the website is copegalwaysleepout.ie, and anyone can have a look at the website, have a look at the 39 business leaders that are taking part. We've got representatives from many different industry sectors, from professional services to medtech to hospitality, manufacturing and so on. So they might know one or two of the people that are taking part. So have a look at that website, copegalwaysleepout.ie, and we'd really appreciate any donations either through the website or if people are out and about in Galway on Shop Street tomorrow evening. We'll be camped outside Matt O'Flaherty's there on Williams Gate Street, and we'd love members of the public to come along, say hello to the team and of course make a donation if they're in a position to do so.
Good stuff. Now, the
just to say, Keith, I suppose all the funds are raised are specifically for Cope Galway's homeless services. You know, there's obviously a lot in the press at the moment about homelessness in Ireland and in Galway. But just to say that Cope Galway at this moment in time are supporting 453 people who are homeless, men, women and children. That includes 199 children who are going to be looking at Christmas in temporary emergency accommodation. So the funds from the Sleep Out are hugely important this year more than ever before.
And are you sleeping out again this year?
I will, yes, along with the 39 business leaders. We'll have a core team from Cope Galway, including our CEO and myself and a couple of others, yeah. So, it's the least we can do. We really appreciate the support of the business community, and I suppose it's just great to see the business community and the wider community coming together in this way, you know, with a real desire, I think, to take action and to do something that's going to make a difference for people who are experiencing homelessness in Galway right now.
All right, so copegalwaysleepout.ie for further details, and you can look up the 39 people there and you can see what it's all about. You can make donations as well there. And you need the money this year. You were saying to me last night when we spoke about this, you urgently need the money because you're under pressure for winter services.
We absolutely are. Look, we appreciate you. You know, we've needed the money every year, I suppose, 11 years ago when the business Sleep Out was set up. We never thought at that time that it would still be continuing 11 years later. We thought this is a problem that might be, you know, that might be addressed within a couple of years. That obviously hasn't been the case. I mean, nationally, the numbers went to over 11. It's almost at 11,500 now in October in terms of the number of people that are homeless across the country. As I said, there's 453 people in Galway that Galway are supporting. And 199 children that are going to face, you know, Christmas in homeless accommodation this year. And that's just not right. So whatever we can do through the Sleep Out to support for Cope Galway to make their lives a little bit easier, a lot of the funds that are generated through the Sleep Out go directly to simple things, actually, to, you know, to helping families with essential costs and to making more homely environment and residential services and so on.
Sharon Fitzpatrick of Cope Galway, you can just go to copegalwaysleepout.ie. That's copegalwaysleepout.ie, and we'll let you know who some of those are in the next hour as well. Now let me go to Mary Coughlin. She's coming back to the Roisin Dubh this weekend, and next Sunday, the 4th of December, the doors open at 8 o'clock and Mary will be there, and she joins me on the line today. Mez Coughlin, good morning to you.
Oh, how are you? I'm well. And just really sad listening to that interview.
I know. It's life. It's life that you and I, we might have had a tough enough life growing up, but it's life that you and I at least we had
never know what it's like.
Listen, you're coming back to the Roisin Dubh on Sunday next. You're going to be there on Sunday the 4th of December.
I am, yeah. Today is Thursday, isn't it? Today is Thursday. In a few days' time, yeah. I was down there actually last week. Margaret Darcy was an honorary doctorate from UCG, and I accompanied her and I saw the market, and Galway looks fab, so I'm looking forward to coming down for the night and spending some time and having a gawk around, you know, as well as doing the gig.
Yeah, as well as doing the gig, like just checking out the Roisin Dubh and making sure everybody's behaving themselves as well.
Yeah.
I missed Margaret's event as Ronan Scully and Margaret. I really missed it. She must have been chuffed with herself.
Oh, stop it. She looks fantastic. I'm going to put up a picture. I mean, they had her in the most beautiful robes. And she gave an outstanding speech. from the 500 students that were there who had possibly never heard of her, the president of the college introduced her and quoted some of her works and everything. And then the students went on to give her a 5-minute standing ovation.
Wow.
It was outrageous. And it was like on law and business was the conferring day.
Yeah.
So these were, you know, and he said to them, these are issues that, you know, might one day come in front of you, you know, whether you should be giving money to funding war machines and stuff. Anyways, it was just very, very moving.
Good.
And great to see her. And she was really pleased about it. And she gave a wonderful speech. And so did the president. So, and we had lunch in the president's rooms afterwards. It was really nice.
I'm delighted for her. I'll have to drop her a card and say hello. Listen to me, yeah. Though. What show are you bringing on Sunday to the Roisin Dubh before Googie has
her? Oh, I'm bringing the Mary Coughlin Best Of. I've just actually. I'm doing the Mary Coughlin show. I'm in. I can probably safe to say I'm in negotiations at the Abbey at the moment about doing the show that I had a little look at during the summer down there. So that's really exciting, and that'll be for the end of next year. So it's called Mirrors. It's a project I've been working on for a couple of years. There you go.
It was a brilliant project, though, and a brilliant production, and it deserves the big stage.
Oh, huge. Like, I mean, we haven't even started. I mean, we've recorded the music, and Valgeir Sigurdsson, whom I worked with from Iceland, he's an electronic, he worked with Björk. He won an Oscar for Björk for a song, and he's worked with Sigur Rós, and he did the music for Woman Undone, and he's going to do the soundscape for us. And we have the music with the jazz trio recorded. I have to do my vocals in January. And we're working with three video artists on projections and stuff. They'll like be all over the floor and the ceiling and the walls in some big space. And, you know, it's just going to be fantastic. I shouldn't be saying too much. But there you go.
It's only you and I having a chat, so it is.
Is it only the two of us?
Just the two of us. Nobody listening. You're grand altogether today. And Maud is ready to do the hair on Sunday, is she?
Maud, it's big shout out to Maud. Maud was in hospital, and I believe she got out yesterday. I've been in contact with her she had a bad fall, and she is at home now. How are you, Maud? And she's probably listening. So a big shout out to Maud Donahue.
Listen,
so she's back in Ash Road.
So the best of is what you're going to do then. And if they want to get further details, then go to the Roisin Dubh website and get details at the Roisin Dubh website, and they can get tickets there from there. And it'll be good to have you home again, though, back into town again.
Yeah, it'll be no stress gig as well, because I was worried about the last thing, because I'd never performed those songs before, you know. Yeah. And that was, you know, that's always dodgy, you know, when you do your first gig in front of a crowd of people that have come to see Mary Coughlin, and I don't get a Mary Coughlin gig. So this is just on my own stuff, so that'll be great.
But you see, it's your talent. You're that talented that you could pull that off and make it into... Yeah. So you have to tell yourself you're talented, because if you don't, nobody else will. You know that, don't you?
I think they might be beginning to see that now.
So it'll be the best of
darling there. Are you leaving?
No, I'm not leaving anywhere.
Did I hear something about it in the paper though? No.
Oh no, I stepped down as chief executive and director when I turned 60 in April, yeah.
Okay, so no, just taking it easier, a bit handy, a bit handier.
I went from 64 to 20 hours a week, so I did 25 hours a week, yeah.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Kind of simple. I'm getting older, you know. I'm getting
to be 67, Kate. I'm having my bus pass, my train pass. I'll be coming down to Galway. I'm thinking of doing a tour by train. Wouldn't that be fun?
Do you know you should
just arrive and set up on the platform, do a gig and take off to the next place.
That'd be a brilliant idea concept, because we used to have those when we were kids. You used to have the mystery train that you get on the train, you didn't know where the hell you were going.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I think I'm onto something here now. The two of us together, yeah?
Yeah. I'll emcee it for you. We'll introduce, we'll jump off, sure. We can into Port Arlington, a couple of songs, we'll wait for the next train to come on, jump on again. Then we'll come as far as that loan. We might get off then in Ballinasloe.
The tour of Galway or whatever, yeah.
Train tour, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah.
In the meantime, though, if they do want to get details, they can do so by quite simply going along to the Roisin Dubh website. And listen, the next time you're down in town, just let me know. We'll sit around the table and
record. I will, yeah, and I'll pop in and have a chat, okay?
We'll have a decent chat, so we will. Listen, you behave yourself in the meantime. And if you don't, we don't really mind, to be quite honest. Now, though, what I'm going to do is, so Mary Coughlin is coming to town this coming Sunday, and if you want to get further details on that, roisindubh.ie for further details, or just go Google Roisin Dubh and just take it from there, because it'll be a great gig. It really will be a great gig. The doors open at 8 o'clock, and the next time she's in town, we'll have a bit of a barney. I have to do this, and this is what I have to do now. Figure that one out, throw that in there. And then I have to do something else here as well. 9505 as well. And throw that in there. So there you go. Now let's head towards the news desk. Let me give you some of the comments which we've got in today as well on the programme. Keith, congratulations to Mary. Looking forward to Sunday night, this caller said. And somebody else said, Keith, in relation to... I don't know if anyone watched Sean Quinn on RT last night. He came up with terrible statements. He said people in the border area are more violent than people in the likes of Galway and South Tipperary. I think you should apologise for that. I haven't watched that, but what I have done is I have recorded it, and I'm going to watch episode one at some stage tonight, and I'm going to watch them over the weekend. I'm fascinated by that whole story, and I would have known Sean Quinn previously, going way, way, way back when we started here. And he was a humble man going around in the car from there. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it. And Keith, Bridget Gavin and Sarah McLaughlin are organising a fundraiser for Cope Galway Homeless on the 11th of December in Foyles Hotel. Is that Foyles Hotel in Clifton you're doing it in? Again, just let us know. If you want to get questions in, by the way, for Amy Keown, you can do so. Do so straight away and get them into... get them straight into us, please, on 0870-958-968, or you can also indeed, you can just ring on 0917-00-77. Keith, my husband Danny Haverty and Johnny Cummins used to run the Old Town Dancing in the Warwick Hotel. Eileen Costello of Shocknessy used to go to them, and I used to jive with her. And that comes from Mary Haverty. Mary, so many people have such wonderful thoughts and memories of Eileen Costello Shocknessy, that I hope justice is done, and done very soon. Let's head towards the 11 o'clock news.
Galway Talks in association with Tesco. Keep it local. Working with over 30 new West of Ireland suppliers.